Welcome back to Spoonful of Sugar. Today's episode is on postoperative fever. Please welcome our host, Maya Amy, a third-year medical student at Drexel University College of Medicine. We hope you enjoy.
Future doctors, thanks for tuning in to Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students by medical students to help the medicine go down. My name is Maya Amy. I'm a student at Drexel University College of Medicine, and I will be your host today. Imagine this, you're on your surgery rotation, and after another successful operation, you're finally starting to feel comfortable with being in the OR. The operation went perfectly. The next morning, you're pre-rounding at 5 a.m., and you're surprised to see that your patient has a fever. Now you need to figure out why your patient has a fever, what to do about it, and have a concrete assessment and plan within the next 15 minutes. What do you do? Luckily, there's a very systematic way that you can think about postoperative fevers, especially when it comes to how you will be tested on this subject. There's a key mnemonic here that we're going to be focusing on. It's the 5 W's: wind, water, walking, wound, wonder drugs. Again, that's wind, water, walking, wound, wonder drugs. During this podcast, we'll go into the details of the causes of fever, what your next step should be, as well as some extra causes outside of this mnemonic. So the best way to assess postoperative fever is based on the timeline of the fever. In this case that we just talked about, your patient that you had surgery yesterday, we know that they're post-op day one. This puts them most at risk for the first W, which was wind, which is atelectasis. Atelectasis, briefly, is the collapse of lung tissue that leads to shortness of breath and decreased oxygenation, as well as the fever. This condition commonly occurs following surgery because of reduced lung expansion. After surgery, patients tend to be in pain and they're taking shallow breaths, leading to them not adequately ventilating. The best treatment for atelectasis is actually to prevent it entirely by using incentive spirometry. And after it develops, actually, the treatment is still incentive spirometry that can be used to reverse it. So, fever 1 to 2 days after surgery, you want to be thinking of that first W, wind, or atelectasis. The key here is you want to prevent it with spirometry, and you can also reverse it with spirometry. So, what do you do if your patient doesn't have a fever post-op day 1 or day 2, but they develop it on day 3? A key here is you want to think about whether or not they had an indwelling catheter. So the answer here is they likely have a UTI. That's the second W, water. That tends to occur 3 to 5 days after the surgery. Factors that contribute to UTIs or make it more likely can be things like catheterization and decreased mobility. Again, because they just had surgery, they're not walking around as much as they usually do. In addition to fevers, patients are often going to have dysuria, urgency, and frequency. Treatment involves first diagnosing it with a urinalysis and getting a culture, and then you want to treat with antibiotics dependent on the culture. So 3 to 5 days after surgery, we're looking at water. That's a UTI. Now, if we're talking about your patient developing a fever around post-op day between 5 and 7, you really want to be thinking about the possibility of a deep vein thrombosis or DVTs. That's the walking part of the mnemonic. So DVTs, briefly, they occur when a blood clot forms in the deep veins, typically in the lower extremities. They can lead to symptoms like swelling, pain, warmth in the affected limb. Especially on the exams, you're likely to see, they'll say unilateral leg swelling, and that's them trying to hint at you that you might be dealing with a DVT. They also present with fever because there's an associated inflammatory response. A lot of times after surgery, patients have prolonged immobilization, like we talked about, they're not moving around as much, and this increases the likelihood of them having a DVT. This is part of the reason that we encourage ambulation in post-surgical patients. You might see people say, oh, I'm going to go walk this patient. And that literally means they go and take them for a walk around the hospital just to make sure they're moving and decreasing the likelihood of DVTs. The primary goal in managing DVTs is prevention, kind of like atelectasis. It's better to prevent it than to treat it. And this is done through things like early mobilization, compression stockings, and prophylactic anticoagulation. If a DVT is suspected, you need to do confirmatory imaging first with an ultrasound. And then treatment involves anticoagulation therapy to prevent clot propagation and to reduce the risk of complications like a pulmonary embolism. One thing that I will note, just keep in mind that we don't usually administer something like TPA or a clot busting agent at this point. For DVTs, we usually use an anticoagulant like heparin or factor Xa inhibitors that just work to inhibit coagulation instead of bust the clot. This just allows your body's fibrinolytic properties to remove the clot. Again, fever around 5 to 7 days post-op could be a sign of DVT. Keep an eye out for that unilateral leg swelling. Prevention is key. You want to make sure you get an ultrasound to check to see if they have a DVT and then treat this with anticoagulation. So far we've done wind, water, walking. And when your patient has a fever more than a week after surgery, it's time for the next W, and that's wound. So at days 5 to 10-ish, about a week after, it's time to be considering a surgical site infections. This is one of the most common infections following surgery, and it can lead to significant morbidity if not promptly diagnosed and treated. Surgical site infections, or SSIs, they're usually pretty easy to identify. The patient's going to have a lot of physical exam findings. The area is going to look infected. You're going to have that localized inflammation, erythema, warmth. Sometimes even you'll have purulent drainage from the surgical site. And the fever is the systemic involvement as well as due to leukocytosis. Risk factors for surgical site infections include things like surgical site contamination, prolonged operative time, and poor wound care. You'll see that some surgeries patients have prophylactic surgical antibiotics. If you suspect that your patient has a surgical site infection, first thing you want to do is you want to get a culture of the wound exudate, and potentially you might want to consider getting some imaging studies like an ultrasound if there's any concerns for an abscess. Treatment here is pretty straightforward. Antibiotics based on your culture. Depending on the severity of the wound infection, however, you might have to consider surgical debridement. So for fevers occurring in that 5 to 10 days post-surgery range, make sure you do a thorough physical exam, and you should find plenty of hints there, and keep surgical site infection on your differential. Remember, you want to treat surgical site infections with the antibiotic regimen, but keep in mind that if it is severe enough, they might need to go back for surgery. The last W we're going to talk about is wonder drugs. So if it's been over a week since the surgery and you have a febrile patient and you've ruled out everything we've talked about so far, you really want to be considering a drug-induced fever. There's various medications that can induce a fever, including antibiotics, antiepileptics, antipsychotics, and a whole bunch of other ones too. Sometimes fever is the only symptom, or it can also be accompanied by other signs of drug hypersensitivity, the typical things like a rash, eosinophilia, or even organ dysfunction. The diagnosis here is really a diagnosis of exclusion. You want to make sure that everything we talked about so far isn't the underlying cause, and then it really involves a lot of digging through the medication history and keeping an eye out for what medications were recently added to the patient's regimen. Once you've figured out that it's likely a drug-induced fever, you want to discontinue the suspected medications and consider using alternate agents if necessary. So we've talked about the causes of fevers from day 1 to over a week following surgery using the 5 W's mnemonic: wind, water, walking, wound, and wonder drug. But what happens when your patient has a fever right after surgery? And we're talking right after, like minutes to hours. So we're going to get into a little bonus content here about fevers that happen intra-op or within a few hours. I'll just do a brief overview of a couple of things that can cause that. So first off, patient could have a fever right after or even during surgery if they have an infection acquired prior to surgery. That's not typically something we think about, but keep that in mind. If they have a fever during surgery, it's possible that they acquired something ahead of time and it's just rearing its head now. Another option is malignant hyperthermia. This is a rare but life-threatening condition triggered by certain anesthetic agents. The most famous agent to cause this is succinylcholine. This can be seen intra-op or shortly post-op. Basically, it's a hypermetabolic response to the anesthetic agent, and the patient is going to present with muscle rigidity, tachycardia, metabolic acidosis, and, as the name suggests, fever. If this is thought to be the case, the offending agents should be promptly discontinued and the patient gets dantrolene. So, what if the patient is having a fever intra-op or immediately post-op and there's a bit of a complication during surgery and they lost more blood than expected? I hope you're thinking about a transfusion reaction. So most often this is going to be febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reactions. There's a lot about transfusion reactions, and I do encourage you to go learn about those. I am not going to get into the different types of transfusion reactions right now, but briefly what happens in the case of the febrile non-hemolytic transfusion reaction is that there's an accumulation of cytokines in the stored blood component. And when the patient receives the blood, the host body's antibodies react against the donor blood and causes this febrile response. This happens pretty quickly. It can happen during transfusion, but you can see it up to 1 to 4 hours after. So that's why you can see it both intra-op and in that post-op, immediate post-op period. The treatment here is really just immediately stop the transfusion. And if you have a question that's asking about what should this patient consider be done in the future to avoid this, you can consider using leukocyte-reduced blood products for future transfusions for this patient. Another possible cause of fever in that intra-op, immediate post-op time frame is adrenal insufficiency. So surgery is very stressful for the body, and in patients with adrenal insufficiency, the patient may not produce enough adrenal hormones to adequately address the stress that their body is going through during surgery. And this leads to things like fatigue, hypotension, and again, fever. So in question stems about this, they are usually very good about making sure that they put in descriptions of the patient that point you towards adrenal insufficiency. So these are patients that are classically going to have things like hyperpigmentation. Questions love mentioning hyperpigmentation. They can also have hypotension, recent weight loss. Just they'll throw in little tidbits of extra information to show that this patient has baseline adrenal insufficiency. So in the case that you have that fever and you have in the question stem, oh, this patient has some things that suggest that they might have adrenal insufficiency, you want to be considering just adrenal insufficiency leading to this febrile response. The treatment typically involves corticosteroid replacement therapy. If you think about what is going on with adrenal insufficiency, they're not creating enough of that end product of corticosteroids, so give them what they're missing. In this episode of Spoonful of Sugar, we delved into the intricacies of postoperative fevers, a common challenge that every medical student encounters during their clinical rotation. We introduced the mnemonic of the 5 W's, that's wind, water, walking, wound, and wonder drugs, as a systematic approach to understanding the causes and management of postoperative fevers. In review, those first couple of days, wind, that's atelectasis or lung collapse. We talked about how that can manifest as a fever within the first couple of days post-surgery and how the key treatment is actually prevention. And incentive spirometry is how you achieve that. So next is water, that's urinary tract infections. They're a potential cause of fever around days 3 to 5 post-op. It's important to promptly diagnose this through urinalysis and culture and follow up with antibiotic therapy. Keep in mind that these patients are likely to have had catheters inserted during the surgery. Next is walking or deep vein thrombosis. That's our concern around days 5 to 7 post-op. Prevention methods like early mobilization and anticoagulation therapy are key. And remember, there's a need to do confirmatory imaging with ultrasound if DVT is suspected. In question stems, a lot of times they're going to mention that unilateral leg swelling. Next is wound. Surgical site infections tend to happen 5 to 10 days post-op. Remember, this is a really physical exam and clinical signs-based diagnosis. You're going to see symptoms that suggest wound infection. Make sure you get your wound cultures and start an antibiotic therapy based on those wound cultures. And don't forget, you might need to do some more surgery. And then wonder drugs, that's the kind of diagnosis of exclusion. Review medication history. Usually this will be a new medication that has been added during the hospital course. Make sure you remove that and give an appropriate substitute medication. And then we wrapped up with a few rapid fire reviews of potential causes of fever in that intra-op / immediately post-op timeframe. And this included things like infection acquired prior to surgery, malignant hyperthermia, transfusion reactions, and adrenal insufficiency. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Spoonful of Sugar. Remember, when faced with a postoperative fever, a systematic approach coupled with the clinical picture is key to providing optimal care. Stay tuned for more episodes designed to help the medicine go down. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe to our podcast or visit our website at spoonfulofsugar.org for further resources and to engage with our community. Until next time, keep studying hard, and remember, Spoonful of Sugar is here to help you navigate your medical journey.